sì, non rimane. Bravo. Il denaro.
This just looks awful. I have no idea. I'm gonna just take it. I'll put these books on the side there in case somebody, I don't know, UN development program. It just looks so messy. Do you want it?
Yeah.
It's just in the front. Well, the front is, but I'll get another one. Should I take this too? It's UNDP.
Oh, gosh, they were. I don't know. It's UNDP.
I'll just put the, I'll leave those things out there.
Okay. ¿Me prestas la lapicera?
Yeah. No,
solo para hacer.
¿Qué
es
con él?
Okay.
How about this? Can I pick this?
This
is from the tent from the morning. Do you want that?
Yeah.
Keep this here. I will keep the desk on here and this one here, and I'll get another iPad. All right. Well, at least we got something on. Because we want to just, of course, listen to you and all, but also to get.
No, it wasn't.
You can choose what you like to answer. You don't have to answer everything. No, you choose what you would like to highlight. The most important thing as far as you are concerned. Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's fine, but as long as they leave it there to answer so that you will not go in. I mean, you know, I'm done. Oh, really? I'm sorry about that, Mr. Secretary. I should have been you. Yeah. Yeah, but if you have written it up and it's available, then you have a, you know, but don't spend 1.5 hours just coming to everything at the moment. Amy?
Can we ask everybody to take their seats now so we can start, because we need to get the responses and then also open the floor to the participants who want to ask a question. The 11th meeting of the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues is called to order. Distinguished members of the forum, this afternoon we shall still continue our discussion under item 6 of the agenda. As part of the in-depth comprehensive dialogue with the agencies, bodies, and funds, we will continue our panel with the International Fund for Agricultural Development, which started this morning's meeting. Mr. Jean-Philippe Audinet, the Director for Policy Division, IFAD, and Antonella Cordone and Zenia, who are the members of his team, are with me in the podium to make comments and answer questions from the participants. So I would like now to give the floor to them to respond to the many, many questions raised by my dear colleagues earlier. But as I said, you know, we don't have all the time, so you can have the liberty to choose what you think is most important, and then later on we can continue the conversations. But we would like to make sure that we have some time also for for the government and the indigenous participants to also raise their questions, and maybe also from the other colleagues. So I give you back the floor, Mr. Jean-Philippe.
Thank you, Vicky. Indeed, the questions were many and were complex and difficult questions. So please forgive us if we don't answer to all. We have actually written elements that we will share with the member of the forum regarding all the questions after, but here I will select only a few. And then we start by the first one, which was, how does IFAD perceive the impact of the declaration in its activities and overall direction? Well, on these questions, I think we have to look at two different levels. One level is the impact of the declaration in our activity at country level. And on this, it depends very much from a country to another, depending on the attitude of both the government and also indigenous people's movement and civil societies on the way in country they use or don't use the declaration. Our impression is that selecting indigenous peoples as a specific and explicit target group, for example, in our country strategy paper, our COSOP, is now easier because the fact that the declaration exists makes this concept and this reality more, in a way, legitimate for an open dialogue. But the other thing which is very important for us is to which extent the declaration has and is influencing our corporate policy. And on this, it's very clear that the policies I was speaking about this morning, that is currently under development, that already went through a first informal discussion with our board of directors, is basically inspired by the declaration. I hope you will be able to see this approved policy document in September, and you will see that although we are not continuously referring to it, actually in the substance, it's extremely influenced by that. However, and to tell the full picture, the fact that some important countries, member of IFAD, have not approved this declaration is, to a certain extent, an obstacle to a full recognition of this document as a guiding document for IFAD in our executive board. And from this point of view, we hope that other countries will do what Australia has been doing recently, is to change its mind and indeed approve the declaration, because having a consensus will help actually being able to use this document as a policy guidance document within an institution as IFAD. The second question, referring also to the declaration, particularly to the Article 42, does IFAD intend to collaborate with the UN Permanent Forum, and how in ensuring the implementation of the declaration, and especially Article 42? On this, well, my first response is the same as before. Yes, we are, through this new policy under preparation, indeed engaging in implementing the declaration in the context of IFAD, taking consideration that IFAD is not a normative institution, it's a fund with its own policy, but by introducing within our policy some of the basic principles that are in the declaration, we actually internalize this declaration in our own corporate policy. I remind also that we've done it already in another policy I was referring to this morning, which is our policy on access to land, where the principle of free, prior and informed consent is already inside and approved. I would like also to refer to another guidance document, which is not a policy but more operational guidelines. We call it our environmental and social assessment procedures. And on this, there are a number, I will not go into details, but a number of specific guidelines that are referring to the rights of indigenous peoples. So, the process of how the declaration will impact on the activity of IFAD, I repeat, a part of it will go through the way it impacts on the countries, and another part is going through the development adoption of this new corporate policy. There was a specific question, again, regarding this policy. At what stage is the development of IFAD own principle of engagement / policies with indigenous peoples? So I repeat, this has been developed through a long process, actually, of consultation with a number of indigenous peoples' leaders, with other institutions, including the member of the interagency support group. It has been presented with a very positive discussion in our informal seminar with the board in April. There was, from this discussion, no major opposition, and a number of countries that were very actively supporting this draft document. They made some comments. We are now integrating these comments. We are also receiving comments from the forum itself, from other sister agencies. They will be integrated, and finally, by the end of this month, basically, in June, we will have a final document that will go to the September board. Obviously, we hope that it will be approved in September. This will depend on our member countries, but we are confident that it should be done in September. And it will be something important for us, because it will be the formalization and the recognition of a certain type of engagement with indigenous peoples that is very much at the heart of the specificity of our institution. There was a number of questions regarding the COSOP, our country strategy paper. On this one, I will ask Antonella to respond to one of them. These are very detailed questions, and the response could be very long. So I will ask Antonella to respond specifically on the third question regarding the COSOP, and in particular regarding the specific case of Honduras, Panama, Belize, Mexico, Bolivia, Brazil, and Guatemala.
Thank you. Thank you, Jean-Philippe. Ms. Chair, thank you. Yes, on the COSOP, the ones we were referring specifically were the ones approved for Latin America division, which pay particular in 2007, which pay particular attention to indigenous peoples. And I want to be telegraphic and provide you with two examples. One is Honduras, that stresses the importance of paying more attention to the needs of rural women and indigenous groups, and also how the process was designed, the COSOPs, with consultations which were conducted with small-scale farmers, women, and indigenous peoples leaders. The other one is Guatemala, and this COSOP is very important for indigenous peoples because it stresses the need to affirm the multicultural and multilingual identity of the country's indigenous peoples through active involvement of indigenous staff and use of indigenous languages in program activities. This COSOP is quite well advanced, and a positive aspect relates to the fact that COSOP addresses the need to affirm the multicultural and multilingual identity, and also what the forum and the ISG has been calling for, the active involvement of indigenous staff at project level when projects are implemented. I'll pass the floor back to you, Jean-Philippe.
Yes, let me now briefly respond to the question regarding the free, prior, and informed consent. How does the organization secure the implementation of this principle with partners on national as on local level? Well, the answer to this has very much to do with how IFAD-funded projects are designed, okay? And I would like to just remind that in 2005 we had a workshop called Indigenous and Tribal People's Perspective on Selected IFAD-Funded Project. And one of the conclusions of the workshop was, and I quote, whenever IFAD-funded projects are promoting the full and effective participation of the community in planning and implementation, it is in practice applying the principle of free, prior, and informed consent. And indeed, the very way most of our projects, not all, but most of the projects we support are designed, made that not only there is an idea that is submitted then to a consent, but the very idea of the project, its objective, its implementation approach, sometimes even the selection of the operational partners, is done with and by the communities that will be involved in the project. And therefore, from this point of view, as you know, IFAD is not very much involved in, for example, big infrastructure development or this type of things. It's very much community-driven development approach that we have. From this point of view, the consent is built by the involvement of communities at local level in the design of the project. Now, this is, I would say, the model. And this is, you will see it, in our policy. However, it's not, things are not so simple, because sometimes within specific areas, there are actually different local communities that may have different interests and views. Typically, in the Sahel or Eastern Africa, you will have pastoralist communities and sedentary farmers' communities that may have, both indigenous, that may have different views and interest in how to manage common property resources. In these type of things, beyond the involvement of people in the project, what has to be built are ways of negotiating between communities, and obviously between communities and the state and the government, in order to ensure that the interest and the rights of the different components of the rural communities are not only taken into account at design, but very much kept within and all along the implementation of the project. And this is something extremely important and which is part very much of the quality of the design of the project we try to achieve. Basically, the way we try to describe this is that it's not IFAD that asks the participation of people, but we try to participate in the project of people in terms of serving what is their own views of their development. I will not answer the question on regarding the microcredit, because we do a lot of microfinance in our portfolio. In most of the case, almost all, we do not require collaterals to get access to credit. So therefore, there is no issue of land or private land ownership.
Can I?
Yeah.
Jean-Philippe,
Should I stop?
No, I will request you to just hold on to the answers, because there might be questions which are similar from governments and from indigenous people. So I will just ask them to state their questions, and then we'll go back to you again. And you can continue with the part where you left off, okay? So I have now on my list some governments and indigenous representatives would like to ask questions. So I'd first ask one government to ask, and then I'll move to the indigenous. So I'd like to ask the representative of the observer state of Denmark, Mr. Andreas Balzer Jorgensen, to ask his questions. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. IFAD should be complemented with success in strengthening its engagement with indigenous peoples and the emerging policy on engagement with indigenous peoples. IFAD should also be complemented with its wide range of projects addressing issues of crucial importance for indigenous peoples. It should finally be credited for its studies in the Latin American and Caribbean region and in the Asian region, which will provide recommendations for further strengthening of this work. Will IFAD also undertake such a study in Africa, as it seems to be needed? As I read the report, it's giving slightly contradictory information on the use of guidelines in applying indigenous issues in all IFAD's relevant projects and programs. In some sections of the report, it seems that the organization is satisfied with UNDG guidelines on indigenous people's issues. In other places, it's said that IFAD will translate the main principles of the declaration into operational guidelines at regional and sub-regional levels. Will IFAD find the UNDG sufficient at the country level, or will IFAD develop specific operational guidelines based on the declaration on regional and sub-regional level? Compared to most other agencies, a large percentage of the total lending program, 22% we were told in the report, and today we were informed that it's 30%, is benefiting indigenous peoples. It appears that a large amount is given in Latin America, some is given in Asia, and less in Africa. Will IFAD in the future give more support to indigenous peoples in Africa? The close engagement with indigenous peoples are through microgrants, which last for only 1 year. 1 year seems a very short period. Are there any plans to let the grants cover more than 1 year so you can develop closer partnerships? As IFAD is undertaking many activities with indigenous peoples, both as small microproject and its mainstream programs and projects, it would be good to learn from their difficulties and limitations. However, little is said on limitations in the report. What is mentioned is that mainstreaming is somehow a problem, that is, there is a need for more systematic approach to all programs and projects where indigenous peoples are found. IFAD writes in the report that it will be ensured by the new policy on engagements with indigenous peoples, but I guess that something more concrete will be needed. I could mention four aspects which can be important in implementing improved strategies for indigenous peoples. One is the capacity building of IFAD staff. Second is to choose consultants in its mainstream work which are conversant with indigenous issues. Three, the employment of indigenous consultants. And finally, the check on the sensitivity on indigenous issues on the agencies and organizations which are implementing the large projects and programs. Is IFAD planning such activities? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Jorgensen, for those questions. I'd like now to call on the representative of the Asian Indigenous Peoples Caucus, Jennifer Corpus. You have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for this opportunity to participate in the dialogue with IFAD. Indigenous peoples in Asia welcome the efforts of IFAD in coming up with its policy of engagement with indigenous peoples. This is very timely in view of the adoption of the UN DRIP. The draft policy has been drafted in close consultation with indigenous peoples, and we are happy to note that many of our suggestions were taken up in the draft policy. We commend IFAD for the provision in the draft policy committing to adhere to the principle of free, prior, and informed consent, and hope that the final policy retains this commitment. We note, however, that the draft policy contains no complaint procedure in cases where the policy is not observed, nor any provision on means for redress for damage caused to indigenous peoples in instances where the policy is not observed. Also, the policy does not mention any type of independent monitoring mechanism for the implementation of the policy. Indigenous peoples have been adversely affected by culturally inappropriate agriculture projects that that IFAD has been supporting in indigenous peoples' territories. We note that this shortcoming has been duly recognized in the draft policy and addressed also, and we look forward to the implementation of the community-driven development model contained in the policy. We put forth the following questions. Can we expect IFAD to speedily adopt the policy, ensuring that the provision on adherence to FPIC is retained and strengthened? Next, what is the possibility of IFAD establishing an independent monitoring mechanism in relation to the implementation of its Indigenous Peoples Policy? We were asked to ask questions, but we also would strongly recommend the establishment of such a body as soon as the policy is approved. Next question is, can IFAD consider the establishment of a complaint mechanism to address cases where the policy is not observed in IFAD projects, as well as means for redress where damage has been caused? We likewise strongly recommend the establishment of these mechanisms. Can IFAD ensure that all its programs are consistent with the UNDRIP, UNDRIP, and that there is high awareness among its staff at all levels of the UNDRIP. And finally, how does IFAD ensure sustainable development of indigenous peoples, especially in areas where IFAD-funded projects are introducing high-value crops, which results in the loss of traditional seed and crop varieties, introducing chemical-based agricultural inputs, which causes health problems, depletion of soil fertility, and marginalization of traditional indigenous farming systems, which are also organic farming systems. And replacing indigenous collective natural resource management and reinforcing individual or private resource use that is unsustainable and causing changes in land use and management. That's all. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Those who are asking questions, if there are lots of them, please make sure that you bring a copy to the party, to the IFAD panel here so that they will have a chance to read the questions in more carefully. I would like now to call on the representative of the observer state of Mexico, Mr. Enrique Ochoa. You have the floor, sir.
Señora Presidenta, mi delegación quiere agradecer la amplia información proporcionada por todas las agencias del sistema de Naciones Unidas que han participado a lo largo de estos días y por los informes que han sido presentados bajo este punto de la agenda. México apoya ampliamente los programas que promueven el bienestar y el mejoramiento de las condiciones de la vida de los pueblos indígenas que llevan a cabo los distintos organismos de Naciones Unidas. Mi delegación quisiera destacar la trascendencia del programa de UNITAR en materia de capacitación para los procesos de negociación, tanto los basados en los derechos como los centrados en la solución de problemas, con objeto de resolver conflictos de una manera mutuamente beneficiosa y sostenible. México considera que este programa brinda a los pueblos indígenas y a los gobiernos herramientas fundamentales para resolver cuestiones pendientes, lo que es la meta del segundo decenio internacional. Asimismo, observamos que este año el informe del Fondo de Población de las Naciones Unidas ha dado alta importancia a los servicios de salud reproductiva intercultural, así como a las medidas dirigidas a promover la igualdad de género y el empoderamiento de las mujeres indígenas y sus organizaciones. Con el objeto de coadyugar a la mejor situación de la salud de las mujeres indígenas por medio de una vinculación interinstitucional que promueva el desarrollo y fortalecimiento de las capacidades de estas, así como del personal de salud que presta sus servicios en comunidades rurales e indígenas de algunos municipios prioritarios, el Gobierno de México inició en 2008 una campaña para el impulso de la salud integral de las mujeres indígenas. Para México es muy importante alcanzar la igualdad entre mujeres y hombres, así como prevenir, atender, sancionar y erradicar la violencia en contra de las mujeres, en particular en contra de las mujeres indígenas. Por ello, se ha aprobado la Ley General para la Igualdad entre Mujeres y Hombres y la Ley General de Acceso de las Mujeres a una Vida Libre de Violencia, y se han dado pasos para su implementación efectiva. En ese sentido, México ha adoptado acciones afirmativas para que las mujeres y las niñas indígenas accedan a becas y a fondos de apoyo a fin de garantizar la igualdad de oportunidades en el acceso a todas las modalidades y niveles educativos, así como asegurar la participación y representación de las mujeres indígenas en la formulación de programas y acciones que atienden las necesidades y mejoren las condiciones de vida de sus comunidades, difundir en las comunidades indígenas los derechos sexuales y reproductivos de las mujeres, haciéndolas partícipes a hombres y a las comunidades de su respeto y ejercicio. Asimismo, se busca impulsar el empoderamiento de las mujeres, así como una participación y representación en espacios de toma de decisión en el Estado y consolidar la cultura democrática. Uno de los obstáculos que continúa estando presente para las mujeres indígenas es su falta de participación en las instancias de toma de decisión. Por ello, apoyamos fomentar la participación de mujeres indígenas en todos los ámbitos incluidos el foro permanente, y quisiéramos sugerir que este órgano abra un espacio para que las mujeres indígenas puedan expresar sus opiniones sobre los usos y costumbres que pudieran afectar el goce de sus derechos humanos. Finalmente, señora presidenta, quisiera informar que el Centro de Estudios para el Adelanto de las Mujeres y la Equidad de Género de la Cámara de Diputados ha elaborado un estudio sobre las necesidades legislativas para acceder a la regulación del trabajo doméstico, cuyo propósito es construir propuestas para mejorar las condiciones laborales de las trabajadoras domésticas. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
Thank you very much. I'd like now to call on the representative of the Confederación de Pueblos Indígenas de Bolivia, Elias Kelka. I think he left already, no? So he's not here. Okay, I call on Ariel Yanes, who is speaking on behalf of the Confederación Sindical de Comunidades Interculturales de Bolivia. Is Ariel Yanes in the room? Nope. Okay, I'll call now on the representative of the Observer State of Norway, Mr. Lars Sigurd Valvatne, the Senior Advisor of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs. You have the floor, sir.
Thank you, Madam Chair. First of all, I would like to thank IFAD for their comprehensive report and for their oral presentation here today. As you have stated, you are now working under the IFAD strategic framework for a period of 2007 to 2010, where indigenous peoples are singled out as one of the fund's principal target groups as regards poverty alleviation. The period of the present strategic framework is now nearing its end. I would then like to ask you if it would be possible for you to elaborate a bit or disclose a bit on your discussions on the next policy framework as regards the work on indigenous peoples. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think the person I called earlier is here. Is Ariel Yanes in the room? Yes, you have the floor, sir. Is that him? Okay. You raise your hands. And, yeah.
Bien, principio saludar a todos los hermanos de los diferentes países y también de los pueblos indígenas. Mi nombre es Ariel Yáñez, soy de la Confederación Sindical de Comunidades Interculturales de Bolivia. Hemos venido a nombre del Pacto de Unidad y a nombre también del Consejo Nacional para el cambio que vivimos en el proceso boliviano. Quería referirme, hace rato hemos estado en el cuarto, en el momento que se dio el cuarto intermedio, respecto a que el FIDA o este fondo estaría de algún modo trabajando con las organizaciones de pueblos indígenas a nivel de, en el caso nuestro, en el nivel de la región de Latinoamérica y en particular de Bolivia. Quiero enfáticamente manifestar de que nosotros queremos que este fondo pueda trabajar de manera orgánica, de manera efectiva con nuestras organizaciones y principalmente de quienes impulsamos la economía familiar, la producción de los pequeños productores, donde nosotros no hemos visto hasta ahora claramente cómo se está enfrentando el tema de la promoción de la producción de los biocombustibles o los llamados agrocombustibles, puesto que esto es un riesgo para todos los pueblos y también para los pueblos indígenas, porque pone en riesgo ciertamente las semillas tradicionales y eso es lo que nosotros queremos enfáticamente preguntar. ¿Cómo están trabajando para que no se pueda promover los agrocombustibles? Porque nosotros vemos un riesgo no solamente para la salud, sino también para que los mismos alimentos van a poder ir faltando en el mundo y seguramente no vamos a poder tener la soberanía alimentaria que nosotros estamos impulsando desde nuestros pueblos. Eso nomás, señora presidenta, y quería agradecerle.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ariel Yanes. And the last person on my list is Mario Flores from Habitat Pro Association. You have the floor, sir.
Señora Presidenta, mi nombre es Mario Flores. Estimados hermanos, hermanas del mundo, les hago llegar un saludo cordial a cada uno de ustedes desde la comunidad indígena Aymara de Condorire, Ayllu Cupiasa, de la provincia Carangas, Corque, Oruro, Bolivia. Estoy por primera vez, quiero compartir con ustedes nuestra comunidad indígena Aymara como una identidad social aymara en Bolivia. Se hace un recuento histórico de la forma como los grupos dominantes han nombrado a las poblaciones originarias en este país. Se plantea cómo a partir de la década de los 70 se constituye la identidad aymara como una identidad política, económica, cultural, que hoy en día unifica en una nación pluricultural a sus poblaciones, que antes se denominaba desde el poder como indios y campesinos, que no hemos sido tomados en cuenta como personas, mientras que localmente se autodenominaban como propias, para ejemplificar el proceso de construcción de lo aymara como identidad indígena aymara. Ahora presento como una comunidad indígena de Condorire. He estado escuchando atentamente en este foro y sugiero como indígena aymara al foro permanente para las cuestiones indígenas que debemos trabajar juntos con las comunidades indígenas sin imponernos. Debemos elaborar un plan maestro regional de desarrollo en cada comunidad indígena con las instituciones que cooperan para el desarrollo de las indígenas. Debemos ser socios, debemos ser transparentes, comunidad indígena, gobierno, organizaciones no gubernamentales y las naciones. Por lo tanto, sugiero también disminuir el porcentaje de morbimortalidad materno-infantil y la incidencia de las enfermedades infectocontagiosas, construcción de centros de salud comunitaria en las comunidades indígenas, disminuir las condiciones de pobreza y marginación que impactan fuertemente en la salud pública, enfáticamente en las niñas y niños menores de 5 años, mujeres a adultos mayores en poblaciones indígenas, implementar y mejorar los servicios de suministro de agua potable.
I would like you to please ask your question from our panelists so that they can respond to whatever questions you like to ask.
Está bien, muchas gracias. Mi pregunta es, ¿cuándo las comunidades indígenas vamos a ser tomados en cuenta para estos proyectos de desarrollo? Sabemos muy bien que las organizaciones no gubernamentales, instituciones están trabajando, pero en realidad no se ve. Esa es mi pregunta. Muchísimas gracias. Hallalla, Bolivia.
Thank you very much, Mr. The representative of Habitat Pro Association. I would like to call on my colleagues now to also briefly ask some questions. We have a few minutes left for them to respond, so please try to be very brief. Mr. Belkasam and then Ms. Molo.
شكرا سيدتي الرئيسة. أود بداية أن أشكر السيد جون والسيدة أنتونيلا وترسيلا وبقية فريق إيفاد في هذا اللقاء. وطبعا أعتقد أنه من الأهم بمكان أن أقول بأن إيفاد يلعب دورا هاما في علاقته مع الشعوب الأصلية. إلا أن هذا الدور مرتبط بالقضاء على الفقر في أوساط الشعوب الأصلية. ومن الضروري أن نتحدث كثيرا عن أن الشعوب الأصلية فقيرة. هذا صحيح، ولكن هذا الفقر ليس أصليا لدى الشعوب الأصلية. لأن الشعوب الأصلية لها أراضي وموارد غنية جدا، والذي أفقرها هو إقصاؤها من كل القرارات. إذن ربما في إطار ربما تعاون بين الفاو منظمة العالمية للتغذية والزراعة وإيفاد، وبناء على المفهوم الذي شرحته لنا هنا منظمة الفاو بأن الزراعة تشمل كل الأنشطة المرتبطة بالطبيعة والتي تمارسها الشعوب الأصلية، سيكون من السهل جدا القضاء على الفقر بشرط أن يكون المنطق لدى المنظمات الدولية ولدى الحكومات ليس هو المساعدات بل الشراكة، لأن النظر إلى قضايا الشعوب الأصلية من وجهة نظر المساعدات يؤدي تماما إلى تكريس الفقر وزيادته على جميع المستويات. ولكن الشراكة على المستويين الوطني والدولي تسمح بالفعل باعتراف بحقوق الشعوب الأصلية وبحقوقها في أراضيها ومواردها، ولكن كذلك تسمح بمراجعة مركزية السلطة ومركزية الموارد ومركزية القيم. وهنا أطرح سؤالا، ربما طرحتم في تقريركم أن 20% من المساعدات تقدمونها توجه بصفة عامة للشعوب الأصلية عن طريق الحكومات، 20%، و80% منها توجه للحكومات، هذا ما طرحتموه. ولكن أريد أن أعرف إذا كنتم من خلال متابعتكم لمشاريعكم هل تراقبون ماذا يجري في أراضي الشعوب الأصلية التي توجهون لها 20% لكي تصل إليها على يد الحكومات، وما إذا كانت المشاريع التي يتم إنتاجها ب80% الموجه للحكومات لا يتم بواسطتها تدمير ما تبقى لدى الشعوب الأصلية؟ أريد أن أعرف إذا كنتم تتابعون ذلك أو لا. النقطة الثانية تتعلق العمل المباشر مع الشعوب الأصلية. العمل المباشر مع الشعوب الأصلية بالنسبة لكم لحد الآن محدود في المشاريع الصغيرة التي تتعلق بالمشاريع الموجهة لمنظمات الشعوب الأصلية. بداية، هل هناك إمكانية لزيادة هذه الميزانيات بعد اعتماد إعلان حقوق الشعوب الأصلية؟ ثم هل هناك إمكانية لفتح مجال التعاون مع الجماعات الأصلية للشعوب الأصلية ومع الحكومات المحلية للشعوب الأصلية انطلاقا من الفترة التالية لما بعد اعتماد الإعلان؟ شكرا.
Thank you very much, Hassan Iqbal Qassam. I'd like to turn now to our colleagues in IFAD to respond, and you can respond again to some questions, not necessarily to all. So I give you the floor. Well, I can extend a little bit until for 15 minutes, but we need to also have some closing remarks from our colleagues. Yeah.
Well, first of all, thank you for all these questions, because they are all very relevant and they will help us in improving our work. Obviously, it's very difficult to answer and to have a dialogue with all of you in such a limited period of time, and actually we will have to find ways to speak to each other more and with more time. I will try briefly to answer to some of the questions, starting with a question from Denmark, which was about an issue that was raised also by our questions from the forum itself, and which is the share of our investment going to indigenous peoples in Africa. It appears indeed in our report that in Africa the percentage of our investment going to indigenous people seems to be much smaller in relative terms than what we do in Latin America or even in Asia. And here I think there is a part of, there is a part that comes from a strategy that very explicitly in Asia and certainly in Latin America, there has been a strategic choice because poverty is extremely concentrated among indigenous peoples to consider indigenous peoples in these two continents not only as a specific target group within our overall target group, but as a priority target group. This is one part of the answer. The second part of the answer is that in Africa, as you know very well, the self-identification as indigenous peoples or the process of self-identification as indigenous people is still ongoing. There are many communities that don't use this term. There are even communities that don't want to use this term because it is potentially creating conflicts. So, in a continent, I'm talking in particular of sub-Saharan Africa, where rural poverty is widespread, the current societies and communities that identify themselves as indigenous peoples are mostly pastoralists, hunter-gatherers, forest dwellers. And so far, but I think it will change, many of the sedentary farmers' communities have not yet adopted this concept and this language. So this is the second part of the answer, is that when you say, I have 30% of my investment with indigenous peoples, we say, with indigenous peoples that self-identify themselves as such. So this may change in the future. Regarding the big picture, I just want to remind you that IFAD is putting between 40 and 50% of its investment in Africa. So we have certainly a very strong focus in Africa because Africa is where we have the biggest concentration of poverty. There was a question about this very, indeed, short-term, one-year small grants provided by the IPAF facility. Let's remember that this, first of all, there are two questions answered to this question. First of all, the extension to 2 years is currently being considered by the board of IPAF. Second, these small grants are only a small instrument that is complementary to larger grants and even more to our big loans project. And the whole challenge and the whole potential of IPAF is precisely to build these links. There was a question about upscaling. How we support local small projects to bring them into a much larger and mainstream development effort is one of the challenges and one of the potential of IPAF. There were some specific questions regarding capacity building of staff. We are doing some efforts, yes, and choose of the right consultant, and we take this into account. I go to the question of the Asia causes. Two very specific questions. I guess you had access to the draft of our policy document. That means that indeed it has been circulating among the indigenous peoples' movements. First, regarding the independent monitoring mechanism, two things here. First of all, IFAD has an independent office of evaluation. All our projects and our policies can and very often are submitted to an independent evaluation process that assesses this project against their intended objective and impact. This is inbuilt in our institution. The second one, and this is still a project, is the idea of establishing an Indigenous Peoples Forum before our governing council, which is the highest level of our governance systems. We have established 4 years ago now a farmers' forum at the governing council of IFAD, which is not part of the formal governance, but which is associated and parallel to it, and which is a moment where actually representatives of the so-called target groups of IFAD can come and speak, have a dialogue with the institution, but also challenge the institution and create this accountability mechanism where the rural poor people select their own representative to go to our governments and say what is wrong and what is right. Okay? We have in mind, and this is actually in the draft of the policy, to establish such an Indigenous Peoples Forum at the Governing Council of IFAD. This will be discussed and hopefully approved in September at our executive board. But there was another question, which is the existence of a complaint mechanism. And this, to tell you the full truth, we have nothing to hide, this was in the draft that was, the first draft that was discussed in our management. And there has been, after long discussion, a decision not to put it in the policy. For a number of reasons that I would not like to go too much into the details on this one, but we believe that if we establish an Indigenous Peoples Forum at IFAD, it will actually serve this very function. From Bolivia, on agrofuel and biofuel. Well, first of all, there are two types of agrofuels. There is the agrifuel of the rural poor. This is taking the woods in the forest and all the traditional energy that is. And there is the industrial agrofuel of our times. IFAD is not at all engaged in promoting industrial agrofuel in any countries. However, and where local populations are interested in promoting crops that may find a market within their own traditional agriculture system, we don't have an opposition to biofuel as to any other kind of crop. If there are demands from peasant campesinos agriculture to include this in their own systems, we are open to supporting them. But certainly not the promotion, I repeat, of industrial biofuel. A question from Mr. Balkassam. Maybe there has been a misunderstanding on the 20%. The 20%, or actually, indeed, actually the 22%, is the part of our loans to government that are financing development projects with indigenous peoples. The rest, the 80%, are also, through government, financing development projects for rural poor people, but where they are not priority, the indigenous peoples are either not present in these rural areas or are not a priority target of the project. We are indeed monitoring both the 20 and the 80, all our projects, through our supervision system, and also through what I said before, which is this independent evaluation of our project, to be sure that the intended beneficiaries and the intended benefits are actually materializing, which is not always the case, obviously, but the fact that we do monitor is important. Norway. Well, to which extent our next strategic framework, or how our next strategic framework will take into account indigenous peoples' issue. We owe a new strategic framework to our governance at the end of 2010. We will start soon working on it because it's a long process. And I cannot obviously give you a full answer to this question because it's not only a long process, but a process on which we don't have full control. Our governance is very much in charge of that also. But one thing I can say is that if, as I hope, in September we will have an approved policy on engagement with indigenous peoples, it is certainly a guarantee that indigenous peoples will remain and be even more present in the new strategic framework of IFAD that will be approved in 2010. The fact that the declaration on the right of indigenous people is approved today, it was not when we started the current strategic framework, will also help. So there are all reasons, and also the UNDG, obviously, guidelines. So I would say that there are many reasons that indigenous peoples will not be less, but probably more present in the new strategic framework. One thing I can also say is that the whole problematic of climate change and the whole issue of natural resource management will be probably stronger in this new strategic framework for reasons that are quite obvious. And on this, maybe, I don't know if Antonella, you would like to add something to the question?
More that, I don't know if I have an answer. Okay. I would like to add only one information on the consultation process with indigenous peoples and IFAD, which were raised by the forum. And shortly, just to say that soon after Johannesburg meeting and the partnership with the UN Permanent Forum, from February 2003, when during the Governing Council, IFAD hosted the first seminar on indigenous peoples' issues, throughout January 2009, at least once a year, if not twice a year, we had consultation with indigenous peoples' leaders at headquarters. We took all the opportunities to also have the forum present. For instance, in 2006, in September, even before the declaration was approved, the chair of the UN Permanent Forum addressed our executive board on advocacy on the declaration. At a regional level, through the facility, recently we had two workshops, one in Asia and one in Latin America, meeting with the organizations who got the grants and also trying to push a process where the organization at grassroots level meet with regional organizations and also with the members of the forum. So to also build this networking that would be at regional level among those organizations, but growing up from the bottom up to the UN Permanent Forum. So just to respond that we continuously make effort, and it has now become a tradition at IFAD that whenever indigenous peoples' issues are addressed, we would like to have indigenous peoples' representatives with us and not us talking on their behalf.
Thank you very much, Antonella. I'd like now to all call on Elisa if you can make some very brief concluding remarks. Margaret, are you going to make one? Because we now have the representative from UNFPA with us to use the next time slot. Yes.
Thank you very much. I want to take this time to give my gratitude to the panel that has been discussing with us. That is the staff of IFAD. I must say sincerely the dialogue has been constructive and it has been very interesting. That's why you saw that there was full participation of participants. And of course, when we talk about support to indigenous peoples, everybody would want to know what exactly happens. And I'm happy that you've elaborated more of what IFA does. And on that note, I would want to urge you, it is of very paramount importance that you continue giving loans or grants to programs at country and regional level. And also, I would wish that you continue supporting activities or projects of indigenous peoples that increase awareness of their rights and cultural identity, that increase capacity in communities, and also support activities or projects that give empowerment to indigenous women. On this note, I would wish to thank you very much, and we shall continue in dialogue in the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Elisa.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tengo tres puntos como finales de condenaciones y agradecer al FIDA nuevamente por esta oportunidad de diálogo directo con los pueblos indígenas. Esperamos que la política del FIDA pueda aprobarse en septiembre. Y también esperamos que más allá de esta aprobación, pensar en su implementación. Porque no hay muy buenos ejemplos de políticas para pueblos indígenas de otras financieras como ustedes. Se han quedado en la aprobación y esperemos que ustedes no sigan ese paso, sino que realmente podamos implementar. Y en este marco, quizás una señal interesante e importante para los pueblos indígenas sería pensar en la sostenibilidad de este pequeño, de este mecanismo que se ha creado para los pueblos indígenas. ¿Cuánto tiempo más tiene de vida? Me pregunto. Entonces, quizás sería importante pensar en el marco de proceso de implementación de esta política, de esta señal del FIDA para los pueblos indígenas, que este mecanismo sea parte del presupuesto del FIDA, ¿no? Y no solamente un pequeño fondo. Y dos, hacer los esfuerzos posibles para que los beneficiarios seamos los pueblos indígenas, no todavía algunos intermediarios. Creo que en ese marco podemos trabajar y ya tenemos lecciones aprendidas que nos podrían, en esta convocatoria que se viene, pues trabajar directamente con las organizaciones indígenas. Sé que hay limitaciones y de eso hemos sido conscientes en la reunión en enero, de algunas organizaciones indígenas a nivel de las comunidades que no cumplen los requisitos administrativos que se les exige y que es parte del mecanismo. Pero que se podría articular estas pequeñas organizaciones indígenas con organizaciones indígenas grandes a nivel nacional que ya cuentan con capacidades técnicas. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, my colleague Elisa Kankimolo. Well, let me thank the colleagues from IFAD, Jean-Philippe, Odine, Antonella, and Zenia for taking time out to be with us. I'm sure there are still questions that are not answered, but you can really deal with those later on with some of our colleagues as well as some of the indigenous peoples or governments who ask the questions. And I just like to say that from my perspective, the IFAD, which is an international financial institution like the World Bank or the Asian Development Bank, is quite a unique one in the sense that it has really done a lot of work in terms of engaging, getting indigenous peoples to engage more actively with them. It was the first time that the Permanent Forum had some meetings with the governing body of the institution, which doesn't happen very often. And also at some point, IFAD in fact appointed an assistant president to take care of indigenous people's issues. Unfortunately, that post is not there anymore, but I think IFAD should rethink of reinstituting that post because it does give a big signal that IFAD is seriously really wanting to address the issues of indigenous peoples, considering that they are the body dealing with the rural poor. And definitely among the rural poor, a big number of these are indigenous people. So let me thank you once again, and we will continue this kind of dialogue, not here, but also in other venues. Thank you very much. Okay, let me now ask the dear colleagues from UNFPA to come around. We have with us the Undersecretary General, Ms. Nima Mane, Mr. Werner Hogg, and Ms. Aminata Tauri. And for this part, I ask my dear colleague, Tonya Gunella Frischner, to chair, as she is also the one in charge of this agenda item. So I'd like Tonya to also come up to the floor. So let us have the colleagues from UNFPA to please take their seats. Thank you very much for coming. Sorry about the little. I'll let Tonya chair this part.
What is that? Thank you.
Tonya will chair.
No, but I think she's sitting here.
Yeah, she is sitting here. Yeah.
I'm not allowed to misrepresent myself. No. Oh, she walked you through everything. Don't worry.
Yeah, okay.
Assistant Secretary. Okay. Not like this. Not
these are the titles.
Okay. And he is to my right. And from
and the three names will be the second.
Okay. Okay.
For me, my money. Like an accent, a money.
Money. Mm-hmm. And Madam Director, would you prefer to go first?
It's up to you. Okay. Because once I start, then the others will follow. So if you're starting, it will probably be better.
Okay. Yes.
Then we go
she showed me a script and I thought she wanted me to use that.
Go to, no, we don't have member states on this one.
No.
Okay.
We don't have organizations.
Yes, right here.
There's a graph.
Okay.
And then we go to ask for.
So first you give up your.
Mm-hmm. So I'll start here.
You do the permanent forum.
Yes.
And then we go to this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. One.
Dear brothers and sisters, if we could have your attention, please. Our distinguished colleagues from UNFPA have arrived. And as you know, we are completing the dialogue with the six UN agencies, and we are finishing the last round of our dialogue. And the UN agency, UNFPA, has so graciously agreed to be part of this dialogue. And I have the great honor to introduce to you the Deputy Executive Director, who will make the opening statement, and that is Pername Mane, and I hope very much that I have pronounced her beautiful name correctly. And Madam Deputy Executive Director, you have the floor. Thank you very much.
For the record, it's Purnima Mane. Madam Chair, distinguished members of the forum, excellencies, distinguished delegates, dear Indigenous friends, ladies and gentlemen, UNFPA would like to express its gratitude to the members of the Permanent Forum and to the Secretariat for allowing us to participate today. It's truly an honor to be part of the forum's first in-depth dialogue with the United Nations agencies, programs, and funds. Participating in this dialogue provides us with a unique opportunity to listen to your concerns and to learn from your wisdom. UNFPA is continuing its efforts to mainstream Indigenous issues throughout its strategies and programs. We are pleased to have included in our report to the Permanent Forum information on some of our programs which support Indigenous peoples in around 24 countries from Latin America and the Caribbean and the Asia-Pacific region. It's also our pleasure to inform you that in line with the recommendations of the forum, UNFPA has continued to intensify its efforts to promote and mainstream a culturally sensitive approach to its programs at the global, regional, and country levels. This approach, which furthers human rights principles through the understanding and respect of different traditions, cultural backgrounds, religious and ethical values, is central for UNFPA's work in dealing with Indigenous issues. In the area of health, for example, UNFPA is aware that there are aspects which are particularly relevant to indigenous peoples. Providing pertinent and effective health services depends on the ability of medical and social services to accommodate cultural understandings, perceptions, and practices. From our many years of experience, UNFPA and our partners are learning how to better deliver intercultural reproductive health information, education, and services, respecting indigenous peoples' worldviews and cultures. UNFPA's programs aim to improve the reproductive health of indigenous peoples with an emphasis on reducing maternal mortality and morbidity while empowering them to advocate for their own rights, including their reproductive ones. For example, UNFPA has been supporting interventions focused on providing indigenous women with quality health care, including emergency obstetric care, voluntary family planning, and skill attendance at birth, as well as HIV and gender-based violence prevention in Bolivia, Brazil, Ecuador, El Salvador, Guyana, Honduras, Mexico, Nicaragua, Panama, Cambodia, Lao People's Democratic Republic, Nepal, and Vietnam, among others. Important results have been achieved through the promotion of intercultural health models in which different health systems coexist and complement each other. These models encourage the participation of local traditional midwives and indigenous healers acting as cultural brokers between indigenous worldviews on health and Western medical practices. UNFPA also carries out data collection and evidence-based studies, advocacy, and promotion of indigenous people's rights, strengthening of indigenous women's networks and local community organizations, and bilingual literacy programs. Promotion of bilingual education with sexual and reproductive health contents has been critical for women and youth empowerment and development, including better health outcomes for present and future generations. UNFPA is also aware that indigenous people's perception of the world is essential to their identity. Development policies must reflect and reinforce those understandings. Indigenous peoples have much to contribute to development, assuring them the space to become architects and agents of their own development is central. I'd like to conclude by saying that UNFPA is committed to the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples and will continue to support its implementation and dissemination to ensure that it reaches all sectors of society. In fact, the adoption of the Declaration, along with the support it has received from governments, has been a key facilitating factor for our work on indigenous issues. I'd like now, Madam Chair, to give the floor to our representatives from Ecuador, Mexico, and Vietnam, who are here in New York today to address the forum briefly and talk about their rich experiences of working to advance the rights of indigenous peoples in their respective countries. We sincerely believe that today's in-depth dialogue will provide a great opportunity to discuss how UNFPA can further contribute to improving the lives and promoting and protecting the human rights of indigenous peoples throughout the world. We look forward to continuing to build on the recommendations that will be made by this forum. Thank you very much. May I now call on...
No, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to make sure that I'm calling them out in the right order. Mm-hmm. It's Jorge Parra, Alfonso Sandoval, and Bruce Campbell.
If I may.
Señora Presidenta, muchas gracias. Quisiera señalar las acciones que el Fondo de Población de Naciones Unidas hace en Ecuador. Ecuador es un país sudamericano con un 6.8% de población indígena. Sin embargo, esta cifra podría ser mayor, y en realidad parece ser mayor. Lo que pasa es que necesitamos mayores fuentes de información y necesitamos trabajar mucho en conocer la magnitud de la población indígena. Existen importantes brechas en el país en salud, educación, ingresos y empleo entre la población indígena y no indígena. Por ejemplo, el acceso a la atención profesional del parto es solamente 30% comparado con un 70% en poblaciones no indígenas. La fecundidad no deseada también es mayor entre las mujeres indígenas, pues estas tienen 1.4 hijos más de los que realmente deseaban tener. La mortalidad materna es un problema en Ecuador como en todos los países andinos, y esta evidentemente es mayor entre nuestras mujeres indígenas. La escolaridad alcanza a solamente 2.5 años entre las mujeres indígenas. ¿Qué estamos haciendo o qué cosa está haciendo el país? El país tiene una nueva constitución desde el año 2008 y reconoce el derecho de los pueblos indígenas. El Plan Nacional de Desarrollo del Ecuador señala también un capítulo especial para lograr la inclusión social y el desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas. Es en este marco que el Fondo de Población quiere colaborar con el país, alineándose perfectamente a las prioridades nacionales en este tema. ¿Qué estamos haciendo? En primer lugar, desarrollar acciones de abogacía importantes para que la interculturalidad y el conocimiento de los factores culturales estén en la política pública. Necesitamos generar evidencia, y generar evidencia significa realizar estudios, investigaciones y apoyar que, por ejemplo, en el censo nacional se incorporen variables relativas a lo que es la variable indígena. Hemos conformado con el Instituto Nacional de Estadística una comisión especial para el desarrollo de estadísticas de los pueblos indígenas en el Ecuador, que específicamente esta comisión técnica trabaje el tema de generar información sobre los pueblos indígenas. En el tema de salud sexual y reproductiva, la salud es importante conocerla desde la cosmovisión de los pueblos indígenas. No es solamente poner un servicio de salud culturalmente adaptado, es tener y conocer la cosmovisión indígena. La cosmovisión indígena concibe a la salud como un tema holístico, no es solamente un proceso salud-enfermedad como la medicina occidental a veces lo mira. Hay una cosmovisión que es necesario conocer, es necesario estudiar, y en eso estamos trabajando en el Fondo de Población en el Ecuador. Es por eso que hemos desarrollado sistemas de atención complementarios y no paralelos. No es el sistema paralelo, medicina occidental y tradicional, que en ningún momento se juntan, son sistemas que no realmente solucionan los problemas de salud. Los problemas de salud tienen que verse en sistemas complementarios, integrales, holísticos. En el tema de género, el Fondo de Población está colaborando con el país en priorizar la lucha contra la violencia, sobre todo la violencia basada en género, que es un problema a veces oculto y es un problema que tenemos que trabajar, prevenir en el país. Para esto es necesario fortalecer las organizaciones, y lo estamos haciendo, organizaciones de mujeres indígenas para que ellas también defiendan su derecho a una vida sin violencia. ¿Qué retos tenemos en el país ahora? Tenemos una constitución, tenemos un plan nacional de desarrollo. Hay que apoyar que esto devenga en políticas públicas efectivas, políticas públicas para que la discriminación disminuya y la inclusión social se incremente en el país. Evidentemente se requiere un consenso y un tiempo, porque la discriminación estructural no desaparece con decretos o leyes, sino hay que hacer un trabajo importante. Hay que también pensar en el contexto de la crisis económica, que cómo va a afectar al desarrollo de los pueblos indígenas la crisis global. Y tenemos que priorizar estos grupos para que se defiendan adecuadamente de la crisis. Hay que fortalecer, y estamos haciendo un fortalecimiento de espacios de diálogo entre el gobierno y las organizaciones indígenas. Y, sobre todo, considerar que las mujeres indígenas, que la población indígena es una población que necesita nuestro apoyo y que sin ellos y su desarrollo no puede haber un desarrollo nacional. Muchas gracias, señora presidenta.
I would like to thank very warmly Mr. Jorge Pada, the representative of UNFPA from Ecuador, and also Madame Manet, the Deputy Executive Director of UNFPA, who spoke earlier, and their excellent comments. I will make some short remarks after all of our speakers do make their remarks. The next speaker is Alfonso Sandoval, the assistant representative of UNFPA from Mexico. And Mr. Sandoval, you have the floor, sir.
Gracias, señora presidenta. Quisiera, en primer lugar, referirme de manera breve a la situación de los pueblos indígenas en México en materia de población y después a las acciones y los desafíos que vemos desde el Fondo de Población de las Naciones Unidas en el país. Como ustedes saben, México es un país diverso y complejo. Si bien tiene un nivel alto de desarrollo humano en promedio, todavía 43% de su población vive en condiciones de pobreza y 14% en condiciones de pobreza extrema. En cuanto a su composición étnica, más de 12 millones de sus habitantes son indígenas, pertenecientes a 68 grupos etnolingüísticos. De estos, 6 concentran más de la mitad de dicha población indígena: los pueblos náhuatl, maya, mixteco, zapoteco, celtal y tzotzil. Entre las cuestiones de población y desarrollo relevantes para los pueblos indígenas de México sobresalen las siguientes. Existen progresos muy significativos en la generación de información sociodemográfica al respecto. Los censos de población en México captan datos al respecto desde hace más de un siglo, y en las encuestas demográficas de las últimas décadas se consideran variables étnicas importantes. Sin embargo, subsisten lagunas e inconsistencias en la información que se traducen, por ejemplo, en la persistencia de discusiones en torno a las diversas estimaciones del número o volumen de la población indígena, así como entre diversas formas de captar esta pertenencia, en particular el uso de la lengua indígena frente a la llamada autoadscripción étnica, todavía en debate, por ejemplo, de cara al censo de 2010. Los cambios demográficos del país se manifiestan cada vez más en la población indígena. Su fecundidad y su mortalidad disminuyen. El envejecimiento se hace cada vez más perceptible. Y su participación en las corrientes migratorias, tanto de unas regiones a otras del país como hacia los Estados Unidos de América, es cada vez mayor. Actualmente, más de la tercera parte de los indígenas de México viven fuera de sus regiones y territorios tradicionales. En cuanto a la situación de los pueblos indígenas en materia de salud reproductiva, a pesar de los avances logrados en los últimos años, persisten importantes rezagos. Por ejemplo, el 22% de la población indígena tiene acceso muy limitado o nulo a los servicios de salud. La mortalidad materna entre las mujeres indígenas es 3 veces más alta que entre las mujeres no indígenas, como producto de los problemas de acceso, calidad y falta de adecuación cultural de los servicios en muchos casos. Más del 20% de las mujeres indígenas manifiesta el deseo de limitar o de espaciar su descendencia, pero no puede hacerlo por falta de acceso a los servicios de salud o por diversas barreras socioculturales. A esto le llamamos demanda insatisfecha de planificación familiar, sin duda uno de los indicadores más claros de la vigencia de los derechos reproductivos en una población. Para contribuir a la superación de estos rezagos, el Fondo de Población ha apoyado desde hace más de una década iniciativas y proyectos en materia de servicios de salud sexual y reproductiva, tales como el fortalecimiento y la adecuación cultural de los servicios a través de instituciones federales y estatales de salud, también a través del desarrollo de modelos de atención comunitaria en salud reproductiva, como son, entre otros, los de consultas colectivas en Chiapas, el de atención a mujeres migrantes, llamado Paso a Paso Cuida el Embarazo, en Oaxaca, o el de integración de la medicina indígena y la medicina institucional en la Huasteca Potosina con pueblos náhuatl y tenec, que ha sido particularmente eficaz en reducir los niveles de mortalidad materna. Asimismo, se han apoyado diversos programas y proyectos de educación y comunicación en temas de salud sexual y reproductiva, equidad de género y derechos, tales como la adecuación cultural de estos contenidos en los programas de educación indígena para adultos, incluyendo alfabetización y educación básica. El desarrollo de la metodología y materiales de bialfabetización en algunas lenguas indígenas. La elaboración de múltiples materiales informativos y de comunicación en diversas lenguas indígenas, incluyendo materiales impresos, audiovisuales, radionovelas, etc. Y el desarrollo de programas participativos de comunicación con jóvenes indígenas, incluyendo creación musical, canciones, teatro, etc. En materia de población y desarrollo, el Fondo de Población ha impulsado y participado en diversas iniciativas para lograr una mejor generación, análisis y utilización de la información sociodemográfica sobre la población indígena. Se ha apoyado la creación de una red nacional sobre estudios de poblaciones indígenas. Se han realizado, bajo nuestro programa de cooperación, diversos estudios sobre salud reproductiva, migraciones indígenas y otros temas, así como un proyecto piloto sobre población, ambiente y desarrollo sustentable en la selva Lacandona, cuya experiencia se prevé aprovechar en otras regiones del estado de Chiapas. Entre las lecciones aprendidas de todas estas iniciativas sobresale la necesidad de mantener un diálogo permanente y honesto con todas las organizaciones e instituciones involucradas, así como la importancia de consolidar equipos de trabajo locales integrados por agentes comunitarios e institucionales. Finalmente, visualizamos muchos desafíos para el futuro, pero entre ellos quisiera destacar 3. El de lograr una plena y coherente integración de los temas y las necesidades de los pueblos indígenas en todos los componentes de los sistemas de información estadística y sociodemográfica del país. 2, el de incorporar el enfoque de derechos humanos y en particular los derechos indígenas en toda nuestra cooperación para el desarrollo. Y 3, fortalecer los vínculos de colaboración y la participación de las organizaciones indígenas en los programas de población y desarrollo, salud reproductiva y equidad de género. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much, Mr. Sandoval, for your presentation and excellent information. I would like to call on Mr. Bruce Campbell, the representative of UNFPA from Vietnam. Mr. Campbell, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. It's truly an honor to be here with our colleagues this morning. I'm going to make a brief presentation about reproductive health services for ethnic minorities in Vietnam. And I'm making that presentation on behalf of UNFPA as well as the UN country team and the people of Vietnam as well. Vietnam is a country of almost 85 million people. It's a large country. It's going through rapid changes economically. It recently joined the World Trade Organization. Soon, perhaps within the next 12 to 24 months, we'll reach middle income status, meaning $1,000 per capita per person. But yet it's a country of great ethnic diversity. Of that 86 or 85 million population, there are 54 different ethnic groups. The major ethnic group is the King themselves, often known as Viet. It's about 86 or 87%. And then there are seven larger ethnic groups that range between 1 and 2%. And then a remaining 46 ethnic groups that are each less than 1% of the population, some just several thousand, up to several hundred thousand population. So there's quite a large ethnic diversity, mostly along the borders in the mountainous regions, the borders of China and Laos. Vietnam has registered some extremely impressive gains in the last few years against the Millennium Development Goals. In fact, most of the MDGs have already been attained. For example, the proportion of poor households has rapidly decreased. And by 2000, universal education had almost been attained. In fact, in university, we have more women attending than men. There have been registered declines in infant mortality and child mortality as well. However, and I think it's important, and that's one of the areas UNFPA has been very interested in monitoring, these national figures, these impressive gains, often mask much poorer performance in some specific provinces and districts. And there are some large discrepancies that have been noticed. And sure enough, as one might suspect, the minorities remain and continue to remain the most vulnerable. And despite targeting of social services, we still see poverty rates approximately three times higher for the ethnic minorities in Vietnam than the population as a whole. And if we look at specifically at reproductive health and using the indicator of maternal mortality, we see on average the maternal mortality for all ethnic groups around 316, whereas those for the Kin, the majority, is around 81. And even further discrepancies exist, approximately 10 times difference for some groups between 411 on down to 45 maternal mortality rates. The government has made some tremendous efforts to address these discrepancies already. 1,919 communes have been identified, and specific investments have been made in terms of road infrastructure, communications, postal systems, even cultural centers being established in these areas of increased vulnerability. And efforts continue to be made with a vision for the next decade of significantly increased resources for these areas. In terms of what the UN has done, and that's I really speak on behalf of UNFPA, the World Health Organization, UNICEF, and UNAIDS, in terms of addressing reproductive health issues, we've had a fairly top-down approach so far, and if we look at the past decade, of dissemination of information and education, provision of supplies and equipment to health facilities, and some training of health workers. And we have a long history. But what we noted is that despite those efforts in areas where the ethnic minorities are more prominent, we have quite low utilization rates as contrasted with the rest of the country. So more recently, and following a series of prospective sociocultural research, some quite substantive qualitative research, we've kind of relooked at our strategy, and together again with our UN colleagues and the bilateral community and some civil society partners have begun training ethnic midwives. Ethnic midwives from communities where they will return to serve. We've also opened up a very systematic dialogue with, in particular, female members of the community, but also ethnic minority leaders and young people, looking at what else we can do in terms of increasing access in these more remote and hard-to-reach communities. And we've gone ahead and recruited ethnic minorities on our staff and at the in our program field offices. And most recently, we've just completed between April 1st and April 15th the population and housing census, and special effort was made to ensure that we had detailed information on ethnic minorities. So in terms of the way forward and a few challenges that still remain, in order for ethnic minorities to maintain and strengthen their indigenous culture while gaining universal access to reproductive health services, it's really become clear that it's very different than countries where you have low coverage and where you really need to just plain increase the supply side. That's not seeming to work in the context of Vietnam. And that here we have to look at, we have to review that and examine our approaches in light of the special needs of the minorities. And we also have to realize that we don't have a simple answer. We can't simply train ethnic midwives and expect them to deliver women in their home, because perhaps some of you know that complicated deliveries will require access to trained access to facilities, to comprehensive emergency obstetric care, to cesarean section, and higher level services. So we're really looking at a challenge of one, trying to encourage as much service to be provided as close as possible to home, and at the same time improving access to higher level services. I think it's very clear that broader support will have to continue as well, road infrastructure, communication channels, and so forth for these communities. And then finally, to address the very sensitive nature of universal access to sexual and reproductive health services, we'll have to maintain that systematic dialogue with women and men in the reproductive ages. And that's not an easy thing to do. That requires regular contact at community level, and that's a long-term that will require a long-term program support. I think one last thing is that it became perfectly clear to us that there will be no one-size-fits-all approach to what we're doing with minorities. And ultimately, as we develop, and this is the year that we're developing the next 10-year strategy for population and reproductive health, we'll have to end up with a strategy that's flexible enough to be adopted to the needs of each and every one of those 54 ethnic groups. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Campbell, for your excellent remarks. If I may, as chair, I would like to respond to just a few comments, if I may. The representatives from UNFPA have been extremely helpful, at least for me as chair of this dialogue, in what they have shared, certainly in the materials that we have received previously and what they have brought to us today. Madam Manea, the Deputy Executive Director of UNFPA, her statements in regard to the agency's commitment to the declaration and its distribution, of course, touches the hearts of everyone here from indigenous communities, because everyone knows how important the declaration is to all of us and what that means to us. So we thank her very, very much for that comment. Knowing that the reproductive health and is coming from a cultural perspective, and the bilingual literacy programs are going on within the agency is very important to Indigenous peoples, and I thank you, Madam Director, for your comments. Mr. Parra, the representative from Ecuador, the maternal mortality rate of of course, is a great concern for us, and the integration of health holistically must, of course, be integrated with the two systems, and we do agree with you with that on that basis. The gender-based violence is an issue, and of course, the economic crisis that is going on will influence that and will have a great effect on Indigenous peoples. So we are all looking closely at that. Mr. Sandoval, the statistics that you shared with us are quite disconcerting, and being that 43% live in poverty, and most our Indigenous peoples are of great concern to us, and the inconsistency in data regarding Indigenous peoples is not just with the government of Mexico, but we see that throughout the international community, and the fact that 22% have no access to health services is of great concern, and that many have no access to family planning is of great concern as well. And Mr. Campbell, in reference to Vietnam, the maternal mortality rates, of course, are high, and we are happy to hear that UNFPA is addressing that issue. The low utilization rates of information by the communities, we would like, I believe, a little bit more information about why that is happening. So maybe if you could address that throughout our dialogue. We are happy to hear the recruitment of local people by UNFPA is one step. And, of course, the infrastructure is a problem. And working with government will be one way to deal with the problem that you have of getting information out, and roads and other infrastructures will pose a barrier for getting out information. But the information excellent information that we have received today has just been a great eye-opener for all of us here today. So I thank you very much for all your information. My colleagues who are assigned and to our dialogue today are Madame Pemene Hassa, and she is going to, and also Lillian Mazangi, are assigned to UNFPA, and Ms. Lillian will begin the discussion. She will begin the questions, Ms. Anga, you have the floor. No, Pamene? I have some confusion, and that is my fault. Madame Hassan, you take the floor. Pamene? And unfortunately, her light is not on. Pamene, they've turned on my light by mistake.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Pose several questions, and along with my questions, after that, my colleague Lillian will pose some questions. So we will go with one set of questions. After the reflection to those questions, we will have the second set of our questions. So just to be more focused for our UNDP colleagues, to reflect on the comments and questions. The first part is the adoption of the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, as we know, has created a historic momentum in terms of the legal and policy basis for action on Indigenous issues. The question comes that how does UNFPA perceive the impact of the declaration, its activities and overall directions. We heard that our Honorable Executive Director talked about the spoke about the declaration and having that into consideration. The UNFP, the Permanent Forum has issued a specific recommendations on implementation of Article 42 of the declaration. Does UNFPA intend to collaborate with the Permanent Forum, and how? In ensuring the implementation of the declaration, and especially Article 42, will be for the UNFPA. In the report of the UNFPA to the 8th session of the Permanent Forum, it notes that in some instances, political conditions can create opportunities for advancing indigenous women's rights and promoting the incorporation of an intercultural perspective into public policies and reproductive health services for indigenous women. The question is, in instances of favorable political conditions, how does UNFPA ensure the implementation of free, prior, and informed consent in the development of national and local health policy, and also in instances of state reluctance, how does UNFPA promote and secure the inclusion of indigenous issues and peoples into national public policy formulation processes, and to what extent UNFPA is able to involve itself and undertake projects in areas where the state is either absent or fails to recognize indigenous peoples. On the regions of Latin America and Asia, in the report to the 8th session of the Permanent Forum from the UNFPA, the question comes, in what countries has UNFPA been most effective in the advancement of its work on indigenous issues, and what have been UNFPA's main substantive areas of cooperation? I also like to ask if you could please assess the barriers to undertaking projects focused on indigenous peoples in other regions. Madam Chair, I stop at this part, and I ask my dear colleague Lillian to pose some questions. So later on, we'll come back to the second set. Thank you.
Merci, ma chère collègue Péname. Merci, Madame la Présidente. Avant d'entrer dans le vif de mes questions, j'aimerais remercier les orateurs de tout à l'heure pour leur brillant exposé et qui seront constructifs pour ce système de dialogue que nous avons instauré entre nous, les agences, les fonds, les programmes du système des Nations Unies. Et je sais qu'avec le FNUAP, nous avons toujours entrepris des dialogues très constructifs. Je poserai par rapport à la déclaration une question plus spécifique pour ajouter à la question de ma collègue Pemane. Dans le cas de l'article 42, si les collègues du FNUAP peuvent nous fournir des renseignements, s'ils sont en mesure de relever des défis principaux dans les domaines du genre, de la santé, de l'enfance et de la jeunesse. Toujours dans le cadre de la santé, ça c'est une deuxième question. Les exposés des représentants par pays ont été assez éloquents, mais nous avons pu relever qu'il y a des défis à relever. Des défis à relever par rapport aux stéréotypes incrustés dans les différents groupes qui ne sont pas autochtones, que comment le FNUAP envisage l'application stricte de l'article 24 de la déclaration par rapport à ces stéréotypes, car l'article 24 dit dans son alinéa 2 que les autochtones ont le droit en toute égalité de jouir du meilleur état possible de santé physique et morale, et les États prennent les mesures nécessaires en vue d'assurer progressivement la pleine réalisation de ce droit. Je passerai à une troisième question qui sera la dernière pour le moment. Dans la gestion du quotidien, les populations autochtones sont confrontées au risque de catastrophes naturelles qui mettent le monde en danger et les vulnérabilisent davantage. Les populations autochtones, nous le savons, détiennent des connaissances susceptibles de juguler et même de prévenir ce genre de drame auquel le monde est de plus en plus confronté. Est-ce que le FNUAP peut nous donner un exemple d'une région où il a pu intégrer avec succès les connaissances autochtones en vue de réduire la pauvreté et la vulnérabilité des populations autochtones en particulier, ainsi que protéger leurs moyens de subsistance et de développement? Je m'arrête à cette troisième question pour donner aux intervenants du FNUAP le temps de nous répondre. Ensuite, nous enchaînerons avec l'autre série de questions, ma collègue Pename et moi. Je vous remercie.
Mr. Hassan, did you want to include a question?
Yes.
And you'll make it brief, please. Thank you.
أود أن أشكر السيدة ماني نائبة المدير التنفيذي والسيد هورهي بارا مندوب الإكواد في الصندوق في الإكوادور والمندوبين الآخرين. في البداية لاحظت No translation. Good. There is no translation. I will. Good. No translation. Good. نعم هل هناك ترجمة؟ لا؟ نعم؟ هل هناك ترجمة الآن؟ نعم؟ جيد جيد. قلت شكرا سيدتي الرئيسة. قلت أود بداية أن أشكر السيدة ماني نائبة المدير التنفيذي والسيد هورهي بارا المندوب في الأكوادور والمندوبين الآخرين الذين لم تذكر أسماءهم، ولكن أعجبت بفكرة قال سيد المندوب الصندوق في الإكوادور، قال إننا نهيئ أنظمة مكملة في مجال الصحة. في الواقع لأنه في بعض البلدان تحاول بعض الحكومات أن في إطار السياسات الاستيعابية بكل بساطة القضاء على جميع أشكال الأنظمة الصحية التقليدية بدعوى أنها ربما تضر أو لا تضر دون أن تهيئ بديلا لذلك. إذن هنا مثلا في قضية استعمال الأعشاب والنباتات في المجال الصحي، أنا واحد من الأطفال الذين تم تربيتهم بدون استعمال الطب على الإطلاق بل بالأعشاب فقط في الأطلس الكبير، ولكن في من أجل وضع نظام جديد يجب أن لا تكون هناك سياسات تدمر النظام التقليدي، وهذا ما حدث في بعض البلدان. وطبعا هناك قضية أخرى تتعلق في مجال عملكم كصندوق للسكان بالفقر الكبير والمدقع، مثلا بأخذنا لمجال كذلك نباتات الأعشاب والنباتات، فهي يتم التجار فيها بدون موافقة مسبقة حرة ومستنيرة للشعوب الأصلية التي توجد تلك النباتات على أراضيها، وهناك شركات عالمية تستفيد من ذلك. وأكبر مثال الآن في الأطلس الكبير هو أرغان، أرغان الذي يستعمل في جميع الآن المواد التجميلية، ولكن لا يستفيد منه سكان الأطلس الكبير خصوصا، وأن شركات عالمية تستفيد منه. طبعا هل هناك إمكانية لدى الصندوق للنظر في بناء شراكات بين السكان والدولة وشركات متعددة للجنسية التي تستغل النباتات الصحية في أراضيهم؟ سؤال آخر يتعلق بالمندوب المكسيك. المكسيك لعب دورا هاما وكبيرا جدا في بروسيسوس المؤدي لاعتماد إعلان حقوق الشعوب الأصلية، وأنشأت لجنة وطنية ومعهد للغات الشعوب الأصلية، ولكن صندوقكم جاء يتحدث عن جانب آخر وهو مجال الفقر، وأوضح حقائق خطيرة جدا ومزعجة جدا. لابد أن هناك سببا عميقا في لهذه الوضعية. فمن جهة لا يمكن النسيان أن السياسة الاستيعابية في دول العالم كلها كانت ولعبت دورا كبيرا في تدمير هويات وثقافات الشعوب الأصلية، ولكن كذلك دمرت أسلوب معيشتهم ومنعتهم من مواصلة تطورهم وتقدمهم. سؤالي المطروح كذلك مندوب المكسيك وربما أيضا لحكومة المكسيك، لأننا نحن هنا في حوار، السؤال هو: هل هناك خطة من أجل العمل على تنفيذ شعار الشراكة الذي هو شعار العقد فيما بين الصندوق والشعوب الأصلية وحكومة المكسيك؟ وأقول بأن هذا السؤال موجه أيضا إلى حكومة المكسيك. شكرا سيدة.
I would like to thank my colleagues, Lilian, Pamene, and Hassan. And we are going to allow our two focal points, Lilian and Pamene, to finish their questions. If my colleagues would allow that, please. And I am going to turn the questions, and now we're going to allow the Honorable Executive Director to answer the questions that have been presented by Lilian and Pamene at this point. Madam Executive Director.
Thank you very much for your interest and for the excellent questions. In order to ensure that we can do justice to them, and we will try in the time that has been provided to us, I'm going to turn to my colleagues and request them to address specific questions, but I'm also going to request my colleagues to be brief to permit the second set of questions. And of course, we'd like to assure you that we are very interested in the dialogue, and if there's anything we're not able to respond, we would be happy to provide the answers in writing. Let me first turn to my colleague, Werner Hogg, who's the director of our technical division, who will respond to the questions related to the impact of the declaration and how we plan to collaborate with the Permanent Forum.
Thank you very much, and thank you very much for the opportunity to have this dialogue with you. Regarding the impact of the declaration, I'm happy to tell you that the declaration has already had an impact on our work. We are starting to consider much more seriously the the situation of the ethnic minorities and indigenous people with respect to our programs. And we are happy that, in fact, the program of action of the International Conference on Population and Development, which is our reference, goes very well hand in hand with basic principles of the declarations and allows us to really advance indigenous people's rights and particularly the rights of women. In our programming, we are taking into account questions of inequity very seriously, and indigenous people and ethnic minorities are very often very strongly concerned by inequities relating to poverty, but also relating to their cultural particularities of their groups. And these two dimensions, or three dimensions, inequity, poverty, and also the cultural specificities of the groups, are very important for our work. But we recognize, on the other hand, the need to continue the training of our staff and of our implementing partners in the country so that they understand the full importance and relevance of the declarations for their work and in their advocacy efforts. To give you some more specific examples how we try to work and plan to work together with the forum and to strengthen the implementation of the declaration, I would just like to mention that on the global level, UNFPA is a member of the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Issues, and we cooperated very closely in the elaboration of the interagency guidelines. And these guidelines, again, which are inspired by the declaration, have been disseminated by the senior management of UNFPA to all our country offices in order to promote their use in the programming and also to promote their use in the UN country teams, the joint UN country teams efforts, in particularly in the field of health, but also in the field of gender equity. We made a particular effort, as you know, in the Latin America and Caribbean region, where the declaration and also the recommendations of this forum and the UNDG guidelines were used to really integrate indigenous people's issues into the country programs. You heard a couple of examples from our colleagues, and many offices, UNFPA offices, have also distributed the text of the declaration, and including its translation into indigenous people's languages and the printing of them in a couple of cases, also in Latin America, but also in Vietnam, for instance. And even in countries such as China, we have contributed to the dissemination of the principles of the declaration to sensitize the central, but also and particularly the regional and local level about the issues which are of concern to you. And we hope very much that we can strengthen this effort. We will build on what you have already done, and we are really looking forward to the future cooperation with the forum and with all the your communities in our respective countries. I would like to hand now over to my colleague Aminata Touré, Chief of the Gender, Culture and Human Rights Branch.
Seems like I'm not having the mic. Okay. Thank you very much, Werner. I'd like to address a set of three questions. The first one, just to recall it, was that in instance of favorable political condition, how does we ensure, we UNFPA, the implementation of free, prior and informed consent in the development of national and local health policies? The key words here is partnership. Partnership with the government. We take a lot of effort in carrying out processes of in-depth consultation in countries with all aligned ministers in order to include indigenous people's views in the whole programming process. Of course, that required times and patience, but we believe that government are key in doing that, and we spend quite a lot of effort in convincing them through advocacy. The second key element strategy is really what we call the human rights-based approach combined with the culturally sensitive approach. UNFPA makes sure that in whatever project we conduct, we make sure that we secure the consent of indigenous people, and we also ensure their direct involvement. So this is how we believe we can further the taking into consideration the needs and rights of indigenous people into the different programming. There was another question related to reluctance of states. If it happened, how does UNFPA promote and secure the inclusion of indigenous issues? And again, I think it's important to highlight that in our intervention, we combine both advocacy toward government, but also building the capacities of indigenous organizations. They have been key partners, as it was highlighted by the colleagues coming from different countries, that they are key partners in this approach. For instance, we have supported the inclusion of indigenous people issues in data collection exercise. We worked with them. It's important that their needs and rights be reflected when we conduct censuses, house censuses, and health surveys. Because if you are not counted, it's very difficult to address your needs from the policy and programmatic perspective. So we do that in the countries where we are involved. Another way also of convincing government is really to develop what we call models. We pilot in some regions some very specific project addressing the needs and rights of indigenous people. And based on the result, we demonstrate to government the value added of addressing the rights and needs of indigenous people using these models. And the third question I'd like to answer in this first round, the question was, to what extent is UNFPA able to involve itself and undertake projects in areas where states is either absent or fail to recognize indigenous people? In all countries, UNFPA worked, I must emphasize that, and I would not do it enough here, we really play the role of the honest broker between the government, the civil societies, and indigenous organizations. We, as the UN, it's our role to make sure that this dialogue happens using the different evidence I talk about. One example that I can bring here is from Panama, for instance, the Ngobe people of Panama, an indigenous group. Today, after 10 years of working with indigenous women on intercultural reproductive health, we are happy to report that the pilot experience that we had led to the development of a maternal mortality reduction strategy. And of course, it reflects very strongly the needs and rights of indigenous women. So that, again, partnership and advocacy is, I would say, the key words in convincing government, but also building the capacities of indigenous organizations. There was two questions. One was about the countries where we are most effective, and another one was on how do we work to empower women's, indigenous women in particular. I would leave the first one maybe to my colleague Lily, and the second one to my colleague Sonia.
Muchas gracias a la foro permanente, a los miembros del foro y a mi colega. Voy a reforzar algunos puntos que ella ya mencionó respecto de en qué países ha sido la acción del Fondo de Población más efectiva. Quizás decir de manera general que la América Latina y el Caribe y Asia son regiones donde ha habido un mayor desarrollo de la, y avances en cuanto a los derechos de los pueblos indígenas. Pero quisiera señalar que estos avances hemos acompañado, el Fondo de Población ha acompañado, ha apoyado los esfuerzos de los gobiernos y de las propias organizaciones indígenas. Y en ese sentido, señalar que quizás las condiciones han sido favorables para el desarrollar estas iniciativas, tanto en América Latina, por ejemplo, la existencia de democracias, de regímenes democráticos, por supuesto, han facilitado el reconocimiento de esos derechos que incluso están presentes en algunas constituciones de algunos países de la región. y decir también que el avance del movimiento indígena en América Latina particularmente ha sido muy importante para poder avanzar, para poder empujar ese reconocimiento a nivel de las de los mecanismos estos constitucionales. Quisiera decir que en los aspectos más sustantivos del trabajo del Fondo de Población, creo que UNFPA ha recogido algunas de las recomendaciones que ha hecho el Foro Permanente en sus periodos previos. Por ejemplo, uno de ellos, el énfasis que se ha dado respecto de la visibilidad estadística de los pueblos indígenas. Yo creo que este es un esfuerzo en el que continuamos realizando para que no solamente los censos, sino todas las encuestas nacionales, pero también incluso los registros administrativos que tienen los ministerios de salud, por ejemplo, o ministerios de educación, puedan tener una información desagregada que cuente y que pueda evidenciar cuáles son las brechas que tenemos en cuanto a acceso a servicios, a bienes, etcétera, a partir de estos datos. Creo que hay un esfuerzo importante en ese sentido en varios países de la región. Voy a señalar solamente algunos, por ejemplo, Guatemala, México, Bolivia, Ecuador, entre algunos de ellos. Luego, una área sustantiva también que tenemos en el Fondo de Población, el acceso de las mujeres indígenas particularmente a los servicios de salud y en general a las acciones de salud. Creo que este es un aspecto que nos ha llevado a preguntarnos en el Fondo de Población, en el caso de América Latina, por ejemplo, y también en Asia, ¿por qué las mujeres indígenas no usan los servicios de salud? Y creo que a partir de esta pregunta y de preguntar a las propias mujeres indígenas por qué no usan los servicios de salud, estamos desarrollando varias estrategias que nos permitan trabajar con los ministerios de salud hacia la formulación de lo que se llaman los modelos interculturales de salud, que pretenden reducir o eliminar esas barreras culturales que están presentes todavía en los servicios. Porque cuando contestamos el por qué las mujeres no acceden a los servicios de salud, encontramos que no es solamente la distancia geográfica, no es solamente la pobreza, que es un problema importante, pero también es el maltrato y la discriminación que todavía subsiste lamentablemente en algunos casos en los servicios de salud pública. Pensamos que trabajar con estas barreras contribuye enormemente a un aspecto clave en América Latina que se ha señalado acá, como es la reducción de la muerte materna, particularmente en las zonas rurales. Los modelos interculturales de salud que aquí se ha mencionado tratan de rescatar las tradiciones, pero también la lengua, las costumbres, la visión propia que tienen los pueblos indígenas sobre su salud. Quisiera allí mencionar, bueno, aquí el caso de Vietnam ya se señaló, pero también hay experiencias en este sentido en Bangladesh, en Panamá, acaba de mencionarlo mi colega Minata, también en el propio Ecuador estamos trabajando en este tema. Y una tercera área sustantiva que quisiera señalar acá es el fortalecimiento del liderazgo de las propias organizaciones indígenas y en particular de las mujeres. Creo que hay un esfuerzo para que las propias organizaciones puedan demandar su derecho a la salud reproductiva, tanto en los ámbitos nacionales, pero también a nivel regional. Esto nos parece fundamental en cuanto que las mujeres indígenas puedan ejercer el derecho a hacer decisiones informadas sobre su salud reproductiva y puedan enfrentar también las situaciones de violencia que existen. Yo quisiera, ya que provengo de la oficina, de una oficina de campo como Ecuador, quisiera señalar también que para el caso de Ecuador, una lección aprendida, un aspecto favorable, ha sido un trabajo sinérgico con otras agencias del sistema de las Naciones Unidas. UNFPA es la agencia que coordina un grupo de trabajo interagencial en el Ecuador y que permite una acción de 8 agencias del sistema de las Naciones Unidas en este momento, trabajando en un programa para la diversidad, sobre la diversidad cultural y la reducción de la pobreza y para la inclusión social, que cuenta con fondos del gobierno español y que creo que nos permite, conjuntamente con el gobierno, acercarnos al cumplimiento tanto del Plan Nacional de Desarrollo como de los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio. Quisiera volver la palabra a mi colega Aminata, pues ella va a tocar algunos temas relacionados con las barreras. Afortunadamente yo tuve la suerte de decirles los logros. Entonces, Aminata, por favor, va a volver con el tema de las barreras y de los obstáculos que tenemos en el trabajo. Muchas gracias.
Thank you very much. Actually, I like to, I can answer that directly, but I think the person who would speak much more to that is our cultural advisor, Azza Karam, who could also complement what I what I'm going to say. Basically, I think I talked a little bit about the different approach that we combine, and it's very specific to UNFPA. And when we look into promoting and advancing the rights of indigenous women, we look through three integrated approaches. The first one being advance gender equality issues within the indigenous community. A second is looking into the human rights-based approach, making sure that they have equal access to all forms of services that we would deliver. And the third one, which is the one Lily referred to, is to be culturally sensitive or relevant to the issue. What we have done so far is to look into different experience across the globe. One in point being, for instance, what is going on in Kenya, where we do have in some of the ethnic minorities the practice of female genital mutilation, which is very much linked to the passage of the child girl or if often the adolescent girl from childhood to womanhood. So it's very much part of the cultural perception of, you know, how do you move from being a child to a woman. And, of course, the exercise is to the practice is the cutting of the genitals in some of the groups. We've been developing dialogues with many of these groups in terms of understanding what is the cultural background of such a practice, but also convincing them and of the consequences, the negative consequences on the health of the women in terms of delivering, in terms of consequences related to hemorrhage, etc. And one of the agreements we had with them is to develop what we call alternative rite of passage, where the cultural practice will be kept, but the cutting will be abandoned. So this is a dialogue trying to integrate the right aspect, the health aspect, but also the cultural aspect of it.
Thank you. We are trying our best to address the questions in the time given. So may I call on Jorge Parra to address the questions related to Article 41-42, the challenges we face, 24. Again, Jorge, please be very brief because we would like to get to the others. And just in sync to mention, we will take the question regarding the humanitarian conditions. And Henya, if you could take that next question. Thank you.
Mina, respecto a la pregunta relativa al artículo 24 y la pregunta relativa a los estereotipos, es cierto, existen en los proveedores de salud ciertos estereotipos que hacen que se vean a los indígenas como ciudadanos de segunda clase. Lo que tenemos que hacer y lo que el Fondo de Población defiende es un enfoque de atención de salud reproductiva y en general de salud basado en derechos. Este enfoque implica necesariamente que, en primer lugar, los proveedores reconozcan el derecho de los pueblos indígenas y de las personas a un nivel de salud superior, y en segundo lugar, también que los pueblos indígenas y las organizaciones sean conscientes que la salud es un derecho y no es un favor. En ese sentido, el UNFPA desarrolla acciones para favorecer un enfoque de atención de salud basado en derechos. En lo que respecta a los derechos, al artículo 24, que es el derecho de los pueblos indígenas a mantener sus medicinas tradicionales y sus prácticas, esto evidentemente viene a ser no solo un respeto a la medicina tradicional, sino un respeto a la cultura. Y por eso debemos verlo de esa manera, como un respeto a la cultura y al enfoque holístico que los pueblos indígenas tienen por la salud. Siempre y cuando, lógicamente, estas prácticas tradicionales no sean dañinas y no sean y no vayan estas mismas en contra de la integridad y la salud de las personas. En ese sentido, el UNFA lo que hace es rescatar los valores, los conocimientos de los pueblos indígenas, colaborar con esto y complementarlo con los sistemas de medicina tradicional. Muchas gracias. Le paso la palabra a Alfonso.
Gracias. Retomo aquí una pregunta específica que se hizo con respecto al apoyo que hubiera dado el Fondo de Población en el caso de México sobre aspectos relacionados con la medicina tradicional indígena y particularmente en el reconocimiento, según entiendo, de dicha contribución a nivel de las marcas, por ejemplo, de los medicamentos respectivos. Aquí quisiera aclarar que este es un tema que va más allá de nuestro mandato como Fondo de Población. Como Fondo de Población no tenemos una intervención, una atribución en materia de comercialización, en materia de marcas farmacéuticas. Sin embargo, a nivel de los modelos de atención comunitaria con comunidades indígenas en temas de salud sexual y reproductiva, sí trabajamos e impulsamos la integración del conocimiento de la medicina tradicional indígena con el de la medicina occidental o institucional, como se le quiera llamar. Y en este aspecto, debo subrayar, hay una gran coincidencia también con las políticas del Gobierno de México. El Ministerio de Salud, la Secretaría de Salud de México, cuenta de hecho con un programa de salud intercultural en donde también de manera permanente y en todas las esferas de los ámbitos de la política de salud impulsa esta integración. Nosotros trabajamos también de cerca con ellos en los temas que tienen que ver con nuestro mandato. Gracias. Devuelvo la palabra a Purnima.
On the question on natural disasters and the knowledge that indigenous people have, for UNFPA, UNFPA works on issues related to emergency preparedness response and recovery. And one of the things that we do promote in our work is basically the indigenous knowledge of how to protect and how to respond to emergencies, because part of their indigenous history and oral history is basically that knowledge. And part of what we do is documenting that and utilizing that in disaster risk reduction. So this is part of what we do on the natural disaster front at the moment, to include the indigenous knowledge into documentation and utilization that in the disaster risk reduction policies. Thank you.
The permanent forum members and the first speaker to continue with the questions is Pemene. Pemene, you have the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, through you, I like to start the second round of the questions. Which is in recent years, UNFPA has been developing staff capacity in the use of a cultural perspective in its work and has developed resource materials to facilitate and mainstream a culturally sensitive approach in its development efforts. How has UNFPA been working in countries to incorporate a culturally sensitive and human rights-based approach to reproductive health policies, programs, and care services in line with the recommendations of the Permanent Forum's fifth session? and what have been the main facilitating factors and obstacles encountered? The second part is the in the report of the UNFPA to the 8th session of the Permanent Forum, it describes a number of projects undertaken together with indigenous women's organizations, and we heard some from our representatives that they have reported. How has UNFPA contributed to the empowerment of indigenous women's organizations and networks? What has this work consisted of, and what has been its result today? The statement of UNFPA's mission declares that the agency supports countries in using population data for policies and programs to reduce poverty and to ensure reproductive rights and gender equality. Where and how has UNFPA contributed to data collection, analysis, dissemination, and usage? We heard some on the dissemination of data, but somehow broader perspective. How has UNFPA data collection regarding indigenous people contributed to the promotion of their rights? On the area of the programs in the report, how has UNFPA worked to prevent HIV among indigenous peoples, and especially indigenous youth? What have been the main lessons learned, and what interventions has UNFPA carried out with regard to migratory movements of indigenous peoples between states? How has UNFPA collaborated with indigenous women in addressing gender-based violence? Which strategies have proven more successful, and how has UNFPA contributed to the recognition of the rights of indigenous youth? Madam Chair, through you, I'd like to give the floor to my dear colleague Lillian to continue some of the questions. Thank you.
Merci, Pemane. Ma série de questions a été sensiblement réduite parce que les personnes qui ont répondu tout à l'heure les ont pratiquement toutes ramassées. Mais il en reste quand même quelques-unes. Si nous devons parler des objectifs du millénaire, des objectifs du développement du millénaire, vous vous rappellerez qu'à notre cinquième session, nous avons déploré le fait que dans les documents de stratégie de réduction de la pauvreté, la dimension autochtone n'y était pas insérée. Et nous avons demandé dans des recommandations aux agences, aux fonds et aux institutions onusiennes, avec l'aide des États, évidemment, d'y pallier. Est-ce que cela a été réalisé? Est-ce que le FNUAP a fait le constat qu'il y a de grandes avancées dans ce sens-là? Une dernière question qui a rapport au changement climatique. Nous savons que les changements climatiques ne sont pas pour arranger le développement des populations déjà assez vulnérables. Ma question est de savoir quels sont les défis que le fonds rencontre par rapport au changement climatique sur le plan de la santé, surtout sur la malaria et le sida, le VIH-sida. Quels sont les défis? Quand nous savons que dans pour améliorer la santé de la reproduction, il faut que les mères porteuses soient saines. Alors que nous savons que la malaria et le VIH-sida se transmettent de mère à enfant. Et nous savons qu'il y a une très forte résurgence de ces maladies pour le moment, en milieu autochtone surtout, par rapport au changement climatique. C'est ma dernière question et nous attendons les réponses.
I would like to warmly thank my colleagues Lillian and Pamene for their very thorough questions directed to UNFPA. Now, I know our time is getting limited. We do also have a request from the Asian Caucus and from the youth to make a short statement. However, we do have several questions from the permanent forum. I am going to direct the questions to the Honorable Executive Director, and she is going to make sure that the questions, as best as can be done, get answered. And then I'm sure she will either direct the rest in writing or whatever she deems the best in this situation. So, Madam Executive Director.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It is actually for us very rewarding that there are so many questions for UNFPA, but in view of the time, what I'm going to try and do is take about 5 to 6 questions, and the remaining we would really be happy to provide in writing because I don't think we can do justice to them all in the time at hand. So what I'm going to suggest to my colleagues, and please bear with me, is that we will start with the question on staff capacity in the use of a cultural perspective, which I will turn to Azza Karam, who's our senior culture advisor. Very briefly, Bruce can come in after that on the main facilitating factors and obstacles, followed by the question on how has UNFPA contributed to the empowerment of Indigenous women's organizations, and I will turn to Sonia for that. After this, we will take, and I'm going into all of them just so that you're prepared for this. After this, if we can, we may not be able to take the questions on the program areas, but if we have time, we'll be happy to come back to them. After that, if we could take the question on the MDGs, if Sonia could take that question, followed by the question on climate change, which I would request Jorge Parra to take. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, and warm greetings to all this distinguished audience. The question that has been directed to me that I have the honor of responding to very, very briefly is how UNFPA's work in countries has incorporated a culturally sensitive and human rights-based approach. Given that my distinguished chief, Ms. Dr. Toure, has already answered part of that question, I shall be even more brief. It's important for me to outline what UNFPA means when we speak of culture. You have all repeated it in different guises. We see culture as all the factors that impact on the way people think, believe, and behave. And therefore, a culturally sensitive approach entails looking at the various agents of change, as we call them, the people, and the ways in which we impact on our work. This means that prior to the design of any of our programs, and bearing in mind that the ultimate objective is to ensure the achievement of human rights, here is what UNFPA undertakes. We take into account the surrounding political, legal, and economic context around any issue. So we see culture as interacting with all of these issues. We also identify the range of government and community-based actors, and here is where our Indigenous partners play a very important role. We take into account not only who the actors are, but what their specific needs and concerns are. We ensure appropriate consultation at all stages, guidance, and full buy-in and ownership from these partners, what we call the agents of change. We try to be as self-conscious as possible, and we hold ourselves accountable to the language, both the written, the spoken, and even the body language that our partners manifest. And we hold ourselves accountable also to being alert to and skilled at mediating and negotiating any potential issues at all times. For several years, we've been developing the capacities of our own staff and our partners in the use of this cultural lens and the perspective. We have developed numerous resource materials to facilitate and to mainstream this human rights-based, culturally sensitive approach. We take into account different worldviews, which is fundamentally about taking into account the different cultural insights. This integrates religious and ethical values simultaneously. We believe that indigenous people have much to contribute to the development of the work that we do, and that without them, the work that we happen to undertake would be valueless. Thank you.
Yes, if I could just continue on for a moment. We were looking also at facilitating factors as well as obstacles encountered as we make efforts to strengthen the capacity of UNFPA. And in this regard, I think that we can observe that one of the major facilitating factors is when you do have a supportive political environment. And I can refer to the case of Vietnam, where the national government has been extremely supportive in identifying the needs and providing quite substantial resources, technical and financial and other resources, to try to address the needs of the ethnic minorities. And where that is not the case, it's very important, and I think when we talk about strengthening capacity of UNFPA, we also have to think about strengthening capacity of our partners. But we need to look to our civil society partners and the networks that we have around the world, networks both at regional level as well as networks within the countries. There is one example that comes to mind. It's Enlace Continental de Mujeres Indígenas de las Américas, and pardon me for the poor pronunciation, but there are many networks of indigenous people. And so we look to strengthen the capacity of those networks as well. And I had also mentioned earlier, we further try to cement our capacity by recruiting indigenous people wherever possible and making sure that their needs are reflected in all of our discussion. Perhaps, though, I think it's really important to know one of the most significant obstacles encountered is dealing with culture and dealing with human rights and dealing with gender. There's no quick fix. This does take time. It's a very participatory, very bottom-up process, and I think we all need to be patient as we move along this road. One last thing, again, taking an example from Vietnam, we have, as a UN country team with 16 agencies represented, we have a program coordination group that's co-convened by UNFPA and UNIFEM that specifically looks at gender, culture, and human rights and ensures that any investment that we make, any investment whatsoever that any one of the 16 agencies makes, is looked at through a cultural lens as well as through gender and a human rights lens as well. And that's just one other way that we look to strengthen the capacity of our staff and ensure that whatever our modest investments are, that they have the greatest impact possible. Thank you.
Gracias. Me voy a dirigir en español porque aquí tenemos en el salón algunas de nuestras contrapartes principales que han venido trabajando con nosotros en el proceso de empoderamiento de mujeres indígenas en América Latina y el Caribe. Además del enlace continental de mujeres indígenas de las Américas, hemos venido trabajando con la sociedad civil, con Family Care International. Hemos venido trabajando también con las organizaciones de mujeres indígenas a nivel de las comunidades, de los países. Y este ha sido un esfuerzo que, parecido a lo que ha dicho mi colega Bruce, requiere de un elemento principal, es el elemento del respeto, de la claridad en el diálogo y de saber tomarse los tiempos que se necesitan para llegar a definir conjuntamente con las mujeres indígenas y las organizaciones, ¿verdad?, cuáles son sus prioridades y cuáles son sus necesidades para avanzar la agenda de ellas y también en el marco, obviamente, de los derechos humanos que hemos venido mencionando acá. Con el enlace continental, a partir del año pasado, hemos venido haciendo un esfuerzo de fortalecer una red que existe en América del Sur, que dirige Tarsila, que ahora le voy a pedir que, por favor, nos diga unos minutos, darle dos minutos de mi tiempo para ella, para que a través de esta organización realmente se fortalezcan las organizaciones de mujeres indígenas, no solamente en temas, sino también institucionalmente. Que tengan los mecanismos de comunicarse entre sí, que tengan la información necesaria, que tengan los vínculos horizontales que permitan que la información se disemine entre sus organizaciones. Y esto es un reto muy grande, porque si bien en algunas de las instituciones más grandes, como las Bartolina Sisa, como la CIDOP, como la CONAIE, como el taller permanente, existen, ¿verdad?, algunas computadoras, algunos equipos, no en todas las comunidades indígenas, de organizaciones mujeres indígenas que quisiera llegar, como la de Chile, como la de Argentina, podemos decir que existen esos insumos. No voy a tomarme mucho tiempo, realmente este es un tema que me apasiona, que me da un sentido de vivir en esta organización y que pienso que realmente nos hace mejores personas el poder aprender a trabajar conjuntamente. El empoderamiento de las mujeres indígenas para estos temas, pero también para su agenda propia, es vital en mover, ¿verdad?, en reducir temas para ellas vitales como las muertes maternas, como la violencia, como el embarazo adolescente y muchos otros temas que ellas han venido tocando a lo largo de estos últimos 4 años. Le quiero pasar la palabra un minuto a Tarsila, si por favor me complementa Tarsila con alguna información. Gracias.
Muchas gracias, hermanas y hermanos. Y muchas gracias, hermanas y hermanos del Fondo de Población de Naciones Unidas. Siguiendo todo lo que hemos escuchado, podemos decir que el Fondo de Población de Naciones Unidas es para nosotras uno de los organismos estratégicos aliados con las mujeres indígenas. En ese sentido, las mujeres indígenas que hemos construido esta alianza en un proceso desde el 2004, ya casi 5 años, podemos decir que ya se están cumpliendo 15 años del Plan de Cairo y felizmente las indígenas nos estamos enterando que existe el Plan de Cairo y que algunas hemos contribuido a algunas recomendaciones que tiene el Plan de Cairo. Luego, estamos fortaleciéndonos, pero también empoderándonos en el sentido de manejar y apropiarnos del tema para incidir en las políticas nacionales de nuestros países. No solo lo nacional, sino a nivel internacional también. Y en ese sentido, los avances son bastantes. Por ahora, tenemos un trabajo concreto con 3 países en Sudamérica. Nos encantaría que todos los países donde se encuentra el UNFPA tengan las puertas abiertas para las mujeres indígenas. Porque a pesar que son países que aparentemente tienen indicadores económicos superados, sin embargo, las mujeres y los pueblos indígenas aún estamos pendientes. Allá en el área rural, como por ejemplo en el caso de Argentina, a pesar que la Argentina puede no necesitar aparentemente, y sin embargo las mujeres tobas, las niñas tobas, todavía están esperando y sufriendo todas las formas de violencia que existe. Si estamos todavía 5 años de las metas del milenio, nos parece prudente que las fuentes que apoyan el Fondo de Población puedan seguir contribuyendo para que en los 5 años que queda pueda hacerse investigaciones, por ejemplo, desagregadas específicamente sobre cuánto hemos avanzado en relación a prevenir la muerte materna específicamente de mujeres indígenas. En los censos, de la misma manera, nos interesa muchísimo que las formas de comunicación y educación consideren y favorezcan las formas comunicacionales orales y apropiadas en la cultura. Todo esto todavía está pendiente. Y saber también que el sector educación en los países se involucren para que en el contenido educativo de la secundaria, por ejemplo, se incluyan el tema de educación para prevenir los embarazos adolescentes que tanto nos preocupan a las madres y los padres. Sería interesantísimo también que ese trabajo que tiene multidimensional el UNFPA, que es por un lado la asesoría técnica y apoyo que da a los estados, nos pueda permitir que en todos los países exista un sistema de salud nacional intercultural, no solamente como proyectos pilotos, sino que sea dentro del sistema
nacional.
Eso es todo. Gracias.
Thank you so much, Tasila. We do appreciate your remarks. I'm going to have to turn the microphone over to our esteemed executive director. She is going to make her closing remarks. Thank you so much.
First of all, thank you very much, Madam Chair. And I'd like to apologize to the delegates that we were not, and to my colleagues who are stand ready to answer your questions, that we couldn't take all of them. The dialogue has obviously been very rewarding and a unique experience for all of us, because in the past several years, UNFPA has been working closely with the Permanent Forum, which gives us an opportunity to present our work with Indigenous peoples. But this dialogue represents a turning point in our collaboration, because for the first time, we are challenged to review our work and to ask ourselves how we can respond better to your needs. When we prepared the written report for this forum, we focused on capturing our country office experiences, recognizing the importance of systematizing the lessons learned over 10 years of work, including not just successes, but also our mistakes and our challenges. We think that this systematization will allow us to devise knowledge assets and a global strategy for providing more coherent responses to Indigenous peoples' issues around the world, even in countries where MDGs are likely to be attained by 2015. As was mentioned by my colleagues earlier, national indicators often hide huge disparities among different groups of the population. And we are very much cognizant that Indigenous peoples and ethnic minorities around the world systematically appear among these groups that are lagging behind in the achievement of the MDGs. We'd therefore like to commit to renew our efforts to address these challenges, to bring them to the forefront, and to expand a more meaningful, culturally pertinent participation of Indigenous peoples in development processes. Nothing about you without you is what we implicitly believe in our planning process. May I conclude by thanking especially the chairperson and the members of the forum, as well as all the people, the delegates and NGO representatives who have engaged actively today in a constructive and positive dialogue. Please be assured that we will share your suggestions and recommendations with our regional and country offices and be vigilant that they are taken into account in their planning of work. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Madame Manet. I am going to turn over the floor to my esteemed colleague, Pemene, for some closing remarks. Pemene. Her microphone is not on. It is now on.
Yes, it is on. Thank you, Madam Chair, for giving me the floor one more time. On behalf of the members of the Permanent Forum, I'd like to extend my sincere gratitude for all the honorable people from UNFPA's informative presentations. It was truly an honor for Permanent Forum to be able to have this fruitful dialogue with respected authorities of UNFPA. Permanent Forum looks forward to working with UNFPA at a national, regional, as well as global levels throughout its comprehensive programs. We really hope that the issue of Indigenous people
in the programs of UNFPA to be as much mainstreamed as possible in very near future, so that we could see more feasible results and everything here in our next session. Thank you again for all your very informative remarks. Thank you.
Ms. Lillian, my colleague and our next speaker. Ms. Lillian, do you have the floor?
Merci, Madame la Présidente. Je remercie le FNUAP et je voudrais dire un petit mot. J'ai pu lire la déclaration de mission du Fonds qui dit que le Fonds soutient les pays en utilisant les données sur la population pour établir des politiques et des programmes pour réduire la pauvreté et assurer que chaque grossesse est voulue, que chaque accouchement est sans risque, que chaque personne est exemptée du VIH-SIDA et que chaque fille et femme est traitée avec dignité et respect. Je suis carrément tombée en admiration devant cette déclaration, car au-delà de cette déclaration, j'ai pu mesurer les défis qui se présentent au personnel sur terrain, au personnel dans les bureaux. Et nous avons pu également, j'ai pu personnellement le constater, que ce sont de grands défis, de grands obstacles, mais beaucoup de volonté réussit à les surmonter. Et j'espère qu'à la session prochaine, notre dialogue sera encore plus fructueux. Je vous remercie.
Here is my colleague, Elise Kanki, who will make some closing remarks. Madam Kanki.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. En el informe presentado por el UNFPA se ha hablado del apoyo que se está dando al logro de los Objetivos de Desarrollo del Milenio. Sin embargo, los pueblos indígenas en muchos de estos informes, yo diría en la mayoría, no están visibilizados. Y ustedes mismos han explicado algunas barreras, por ejemplo, el hecho de que no pueden incidir en el sistema de datos de los sectores, por ejemplo, de educación y salud, ¿no?, donde no se puede incluir parámetros que puedan darnos específicamente qué es lo que está sucediendo en las comunidades y pueblos indígenas. Pues yo sugeriría un esfuerzo de empezar a trabajar en esto, porque esto ya suena como a una disculpa repetitiva que hemos escuchado estando dentro de la administración pública, estando dentro de la cooperación, trabajando a nivel de las comunidades o trabajando dentro de los gobiernos locales. Y creo que es hora de que tomemos decisiones y empecemos a arriesgarnos. Yo creo que con casos prácticos con los cuales podamos aprender metodología y demostrar que no se necesita los tantos recursos que siempre mencionamos que se requeriría para este tipo de intervención, porque realmente la información que levantan los servicios de salud a nivel de las comunidades y que pasan por los distritos de salud y luego pasan a las instancias nacionales, realmente tiene una riqueza estadística que solo valdría incorporar 2 o 3 parámetros para visibilizar el tema indígena, tanto en educación como en salud. Y yo realmente veo que eso ya no es una justificación. El segundo tema que quisiera recalcar es el tema de los censos. Con gran preocupación hemos estado escuchando que algunos, especialmente en la región de Latinoamérica, que algunos países van a obviar las preguntas para visibilizar, identificar la población indígena. Realmente preocupa esta decisión. Estamos dando pasos demasiado riesgosos para atrás. Y yo sugeriría al UNFPA no ser parte de esto. Creo que ustedes pueden más bien ayudarnos a empujar para que estos países se retracten de esa decisión y vuelvan a incorporar estas preguntas en las boletas censales para la ronda de los censos 2010. Muchas gracias.
I would like to thank my distinguished colleagues of the Permanent Forum for their excellent questions and participation today. And also, please extend, and all of us, please extend our gratitude to the representatives of UNFPA, and through you and on behalf of the members here, the delegates, and all of us at the Permanent Forum on Indigenous Issues at the 8th session, Madame Manet, please accept our sincere thank you for a very rewarding and, as you say, unique experience for this dialogue and furthering of partnership and collaboration between the Permanent Forum and UN agencies, and in particular, your agency. Thank you for bringing your team and your excellent team here to be with us today. Please extend our thank you. And please extend our thank yous to our interpreters for staying a few extra minutes and for being so patient. I am, to the Youth Caucus, to the Asian Caucus, I am handing over the question of the Youth Caucus to our agency representative, and the Asian Caucus can bring your statement up and give it to the representative. We have run out of time, so please, and the Secretariat does have a short announcement. Thank you, and have a good evening.
Right after this meeting, the Permanent Forum will meet with the Interagency Support Group on Indigenous Issues in small alphabet room B. Thank you. That's it.